Chapter 25. Time Enough for Contemplation. I hadn't thought that Chuzzlewit was a popular book, but I was wrong. Not one of us expected the public outcry and media attention that his murder provoked. Mr. Quaverley's autopsy was a matter of public record. His burial was attended by 150,000 Dickens fans from around the globe. Braxton Hicks told us to say nothing about the Literatech involvement, but news soon leaked out. Bowden Cable, speaking to the Owl newspaper. Commander Braxton Hicks threw the newspaper on the desk in front of us. He paced around for a bit before collapsing heavily into his chair.
"I want to know who told the press," he announced.
Jack Shitt was leaning on the window frame and watching us all, while smoking a rather small and foul-smelling Turkish cigarette. The headline was unequivocal. Chuzzlewit Death, Spec Ops Blamed. It went on to outline specifically how unnamed sources within Swindon Spec Ops had intimated that a botched ransom payment had been the cause of Quaverley's death. It was arse about face, but the basic facts were correct. It had placed Hicks under a lot of pressure and caused him to overspend his precious budget by a phenomenal amount to try to discover Hades' whereabouts. The spotter plane that Bowden and I had pursued had been found a burned-out wreck in a field on the English side of Hay-on-Wye. The Gladstone, full of the counterfeit money, was close by, along with the ersatz Gainsborough. It hadn't fooled Acheron for one second. We were all convinced that Hades was in Wales, but even political intervention at the highest level had drawn a blank. The Welsh Home Secretary himself had sworn that they would not knowingly stoop to harbour such a notorious criminal. With no jurisdiction on the Welsh side of the border, our searches had centred around the marches, to no avail.
"If the press found out, it wasn't from us," said Victor. "We have nothing to gain from press coverage, and everything to lose."
He glanced over at Jack Shitt, who shrugged.
"Don't look at me," said Shitt noncommittally. "I'm just an observer, here at the behest of Goliath."
Braxton got up and paced the room. Bowden, Victor, and I watched him in silence. We felt sorry for him. He wasn't a bad man, just weak. The whole affair was a poisoned chalice, and if he wasn't removed by the regional Spec Ops commander, Goliath would as likely as not do the job themselves.
"Does anyone have any ideas?"
We all looked at him. We had a few ideas, but nothing that could be said in front of Shitt, since he was so willing to let us be killed that evening at Archer's place. Not one of us would have given Goliath so much as the time of day.
"Has Mrs. Delamere been traced?"
"We found her okay," I replied. "She was delighted to discover that she had a motorway services named after her. She hasn't seen her son for 5 years, but is under surveillance in case he tries to make contact."
"Good," murmured Braxton. "What else?"
Victor spoke.
"We understand Felix Seven has been replaced. A young man named Danny Chance went missing from Reading. His face was found in a wastebasket on the third floor of the multi-story. We've distributed the morgue photos of Felix Seven. They should match the new Felix."
"Are you sure Archer didn't say anything but Felix Seven before you killed him?"
asked Hicks. "Positive," assured Bowden in his best lying voice. We returned to the Literatech office in a glum mood. Braxton's removal might provoke a dangerous shake-up in the department, and I had Mycroft and Polly to think of. Victor hung up his coat and called across to Finisterre, asking him if there had been any change. Finisterre looked up from a much-thumbed copy of Chuzzlewit. He, Bailey and Herr Bite had been rereading it on a 24-hour relay basis since Acheron's escape. Nothing seemed to have changed. It was slightly perplexing. The 40 brothers had been working on the only piece of information we had that SO5 or Goliath didn't. Sturmey Archer had made a reference to a Dr. Muller before expiring, and that had been the subject of a rigorous search on Spec-Ops and police databases. A rigorous yet secretive search. That was what had taken the time.
"Anything, Jeff?"
asked Victor, rolling up his shirt sleeves. Jeff coughed.
"There are no Dr. Mullers registered in England or on the continent, either in medicine or philosophy."
"So it's a false name."
"Who are alive," Jeff smiled. "However, there was a Dr. Muller in attendance at Parkhurst Prison in 1972.
"I'm listening."
"It was at the same time that Delamere was banged up for fraud."
"This is getting better."
"And Delamere had a cellmate named Felix Tabula Rasa."
"There's a face that fits," murmured Bowden.
"Right. Dr. Muller was already under investigation for selling donor kidneys. He committed suicide in 74, shortly before the hearing. Swam into the sea after leaving a note. His body was never recovered." Victor rubbed his hands together happily.
"Sounds like a faked death. How do we go about hunting down a dead man?"
Jeff held up her fax. "I've had to use up a lot of favours at the English Medical Council. They don't like giving out personal files whether the subject is alive or dead, but here it is." Victor took the fax and read out the pertinent points.
"Theodore Muller. Majored in physics before pursuing a career in medicine. Struck off in 74 for gross professional misconduct. He was a fine tenor, a good Hamlet at Cambridge, brother of the most worshipful order of the Wombat, keen train spotter, and a founding member of the Earth Crossers."
"Hmm," I murmured. "It's a good bet that he might continue to indulge himself in old hobbies, even if he was living under an assumed name."
"What do you suggest?"
asked Victor.
"Wait until the next steam train extravaganza. I understand the Mallard is defending her speed record next month."
"Not soon enough." "The Wombats never disclose membership," observed Bowden. Victor nodded.
"Well, that's that, then."
"Not exactly," I said slowly.
"Go on."
"I was thinking more about someone infiltrating the next Earthcrossers meeting."
"Earthcrossers?"
said Victor, with more than his fair share of incredulity.
"You've got no chance, Thursday. Weird lunatics doing strange things privately on deserted hillsides. Do you know what you have to go through to be admitted to their exclusive club?"
I smiled. "It's mostly distinguished and respected professional people of mature years." Victor looked at Bowden and me in turn.
"I don't like that look you're giving me."
Bowden quickly scoured a copy of the current Astronomer's Almanac. "Bingo. It says here that they meet on Liddington Hill at 2 p.m. the day after tomorrow. That gives us 55 hours to prepare."
"No way,"
said Victor indignantly.
"There is no way, I repeat, no way on God's own earth that you are going to get me to pose as an Earth Crosser."